close up.
My first question is actually for VRE, you say 3 specimens every week. Do we have to have 3 negatives before take them from isolation one?
What the CDC says is 3 specimens, each one 1 week apart.
Yes.
So it's 3 total, 1 week between each one. And certainly in our system, what we recommend is that you have a culture from the original source, which would say be a decubitus or your urine in this case, and the stool. Because wherever you have VRE, it came from the stool. The average person with VRE has 10 to the 900 million organisms per gram of stool. So it's 1 a week for 3 weeks.
So 3 of them have
and
to
they
be
have, all 3 have to be negative consecutively.
Okay, another question actually on that. Most of our patients come back with UTI from ER visit. Should we redo the UA and stop the antibiotics, or should we continue? That's pretty much...
Well, you know, it's a real problem, and I have this all the time. When I get a patient transferred to a long-term care facility with a plan by the physician in the hospital, I mean, they're the one that saw the person there, did the workup, and made a decision. And if I'm going to change what they did, not knowing what they did, not having all their data, I think it's, you're almost stuck, I think, with their plan, unfortunately. Because I've had lots of crazy plans come back from the hospital, but I'm real leery unless it's obvious about changing it. But I think you're right. What I see over and over again is no matter what the source of the fever, they got a urine culture and it was positive and they blame it on the urine.
Thank you all for that great talk. This question kind of goes along with the previous question about how to deal with folks when you get patients sent over for, you know, for example, the altered mental status, delirium, sent to the ER, they get a UA, oh, it's a UTI, it's barely positive, and they get treated. I mean, that this is a cycle. It just cycles over and over. And the question is, I guess, from a system standpoint, is there going to be education of ER docs, urology docs? Because that's the other thing we see a lot of are these folks on prophylactic antibiotics because the urologist has prescribed them. So from a system standpoint, in terms of education and because it'll just continue and continue and continue. What are the efforts that are going on to address that?
Well, I would be happy to if the ER has asked you to come talk, but it's kind of hard to, you know. So right now there's no plan to educate the emergency departments, but it seems like it would be worth it to the referring long-term care facility to invest in that education. Because I think each one has their own referring pattern, and I think it would be great to educate those ER docs.
Dr. Oldfield, I think there also perhaps needs to be a follow up with that as well. I mean, you know, a lot of us in here represent long term care, and I think we've got folks from across the spectrum. But inevitably, most of our admissions to the nursing home come either with a Foley or the Foley was pulled on day of discharge from the hospital. So I think there needs to be some education on the hospital side as well. I mean, a Foley very well may be warranted during surgery and things of that nature, but now the patient's in the hospital for another 6 or 7 days, they still have the Foley in, they're ready to come to us, the Foley's pulled an hour ago. And now they're in our building, and of course you know it's gonna grow 48 to 72 hours later. So is there any effort to educate the hospitals? Forget about the ERs at this point, just the hospitals in general.
If I could just add one thing. I think Edna brought this up. When you're really doing surveillance for a healthcare-associated infection, it's very important, even if you don't own it in your facility, that you report that back to the transferring facility's IP. So that they're aware that that infection occurred. And that may start that education process where they can then share that with whoever discharged that patient. So I think it's important that we share that information on transfer and discharge equally.
To address Mr. Abraham's point, there is an incentive, actually a couple of incentives to acute care hospitals to not do what you just described, that is to insert and maintain a indwelling catheter without a specific medical indication. Again, one has to point out that there are indications. The first point being that urinary tract infection associated with catheter use is a hospital-acquired condition, and as such, reimbursement will be denied for any additional length of stay that the patient incurs or costs as a result of that infection. Secondly, coming shortly, these are reportable, publicly reportable occurrences. So hospital-acquired conditions of various sorts, including urinary tract infection from catheter, will be public information. And in many respects, that will discourage hospitals from allowing patients to leave with a catheter. My own experience, and maybe Edna can comment on this too, is that most of the initiative to reduce the use of catheters in hospitals comes from both infectious disease prevention control, but primarily from nursing leadership. It has to be a priority of nurses. And when it's done, and there are specific criteria that are consistent with the CDC's very strict standards for the use of catheters in hospitalized patients, the rates will decline. So I think there are incentives. I think what you're pointing out is that there's still a need to improve. And all of us as healthcare providers should do, as Carol was just saying, is provide feedback to the hospital when a patient is found to have an infection that within 72 hours, so it's present on admission.
Other questions?
First, I'd like to thank Dr. Oldfield for talking about the macrovid issue. When I think of my most frail, older patients that I care for, I can probably count on one hand how many of them have a creatinine clearance greater than 60, milliliters a minute. And that is one of the medications that I see coming back from the emergency room a lot. So they think they're trying to follow the right idea, but it's not always effective for the most frail. The other thing is that for those individuals also, the idea of a fever is often difficult because they are so frail. Sometimes they won't even mount a fever response before they're really ill. So I mean, I guess it's just kind of a comment that it is not an exact science, but it's really hard for the most frail older people that we're caring for. So I don't know if you all have understand the importance of, even the smallest temperature increase can be, significant for this group.
And I mean, that's why they defined it in different ways. So not greater than 100.4, but greater than 99.5 is considered a fever in the elderly. But you're right. I mean, there's so many presentations of, appendicitis with no abdominal pain, no fever. You could go on and on, but you're right. And I hope I didn't. Well, it's incredibly difficult. We have a real conundrum with these. When all the urine cultures are going to be positive or more than half, then how do you ferret through all of this smoke to get to the answer? Yeah, it's very difficult. I think the other thing we found out is that VDH and the Virginia Healthcare Association ought to go to EDs, emergency departments, and hospitalists next with their educational program on UTIs and how if they are on the receiving end of someone from a long-term care facility, the urine culture is most likely going to be positive, but that's not your answer necessarily.
I just want to add excellent points that Dr. Oldfield made, is that in general, there isn't a rush to treat a patient who may have symptoms suggestive of a urinary tract infection. Follow the F315 guidelines on that. Get additional information, including your urinalysis and your urine culture, and then respond to the total picture, symptoms plus the urine culture. Because as we've talked about previously, resistance to the usual antibiotics becomes very common in long-term care, and empiric treatment with a drug that is either given at too low a dose or is not going to be effective is only going to worsen this problem of drug-resistant organisms. So follow those guidelines. I think you're in pretty good ground, even though what we've told you today is that there isn't any one symptom or sign that is highly predictive of urinary tract infection. You have to look at the global picture, but these are good guidelines.
One more question? Two more questions.
How can you do
you know how long does it take the biofilm to grow on the catheter on average once we reinsert a new one?
I can't tell you that, but it's relatively quickly. I mean, not within 24 hours, I don't think, but it occurs relatively quickly. And certainly the colonization rate after you put a Foley in when it was sterile is 3 to 10% per day. So it's very rapid that you get that colonization after you put that Foley in. How quickly the biofilm, I can't tell you.
So if we changed a catheter to get the culture, and 3 days later we get the results, do we need to change the catheter again to start the antibiotic?
No, no.
You talked about a new catheter.
Yeah, no, it's just that. Start. It's just that first time.
Okay. Thanks.
Question?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Hi, I come from an assisted living environment, and what I think that we need education-wise is for families. We need to simplify this a little bit because mom is going to tell you. My mom has, I know she's got a UTI. You have to test her, she's got a UTI. She has a history of this. They don't understand the whole concept. So I think if we're talking about education, we need to also bring it to our facility. And I know Dr. Palmer will do this for us. Ashley's our medical director over at the Memory Center, but that's where my problem is most of the time, is dealing with families.
I was in one of our assisted living facilities, and that was brought up by the nurse. The daughter was there, and I think the best thing to do is educate the family on what we treat and what we do not treat, and also make sure you also emphasize on the side effects or outcomes of antibiotic therapy, you know, like C. diff and bad side effects and all that stuff. So I think education would really help that family member to understand.
Yeah, I think that's what you stress is the collateral damage.
Collateral.
So you can tell them, first of all, well, 50% of everybody's going to have positive urine culture. 90% are going to have abnormal UA, so that doesn't really tell me anything. But if I treat her, I'm going to make it worse for her with resistance, 8 times increased risk of C. diff, you know, increased risk of MRSA. I think that would scare off a lot of family, or at least have. And I just got into that discussion a couple of weeks ago with a family member that was adamant about it. And I laid out the statistics, and they backed down.
One more question.
Is there any potential for biomarkers other than white cells or bacteria for differentiating colonization versus active infection?
Yeah, great question. So that's a very good question, Dan. You know, now that we, and I haven't seen any articles that are using like CRP or procalcitonin. You know, we just got the machine in it. Norfolk General, and the use went from 0 to probably 10,000 procalcitonin levels. Nobody knows what to do with them. But I don't know off the top of my head. There's lots on upper respiratory tract infections, pneumonia, and using procalcitonin. It'd be very interesting to actually look at procalcitonin and trying to decide whether they have urinary tract infection. But I'm not aware of the data. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Is it possible if they have a Foley in, because normally, like she said, when they do it as a discharge, it's like an hour, and then they pull in the Foley out. Is it possible when they pull the Foley out, in, when they're in the hospital, that they can go ahead on and test them for a UTI? Because normally when they get back, like they said, they normally have a UTI.
Right. But that's the point. They have to have symptoms. So just the fact you've got a positive culture means nothing. In fact, we said that almost 10% per day of catheterization will have positive urinary tract, positive cultures. So by 10 days, every culture is positive, but it doesn't tell you anything. It's the symptoms that matter.
Hi, my question is, when we're talking about reculture and 3 cultures a week apart from VRE, does that include ESBL and MRSA?
The way to get somebody out of isolation is different in every hospital. CDC has some guidelines. You know, they say for ESBL, MRSA, everything except VRE, it's one. One thing I run into trouble with, though, is skilled nursing facilities that won't accept my hospitalized patient until they have C. diff negative times 3. That's totally erroneous. just like urinary tract cultures, you never do a test of cure C. diff. 30% of people cured of their C. diff will still have positive toxin assays. And in fact, what we found out is you never do C. diff times 3 anyway, even in the hospital. You do it once, and then you make a clinical decision. And probably 90% of the C. diffs are wasted. But at any rate, so what I would do is I would follow your facility's guidelines on how you get people in and out of isolation and just be in conformity with it. But most, it's just one negative.
So we are getting residents coming in from acute care facility that's had 2 C. diffs tested in the hospital. We don't require a follow-up one. But then in the discharge summary, the doctor's asking for a repeat one and this week and a second one the following week. Well, if you had one negative in the hospital, why do you have to do the rest? So that is correct. You don't have to repeat it.
Exactly. And you don't do a C. diff after treatment to test of cure.
Thank you for great questions. One thing I would like to point out that we didn't have time to go over that's in your packet is an SBAR tool that Dr. Palmer brought with him. It's a tool for assessment, for gathering good information before calling the clinician and for documentation for the follow-up. If you'd like to talk about this tool a little bit and have a minute, feel free to come up afterwards and we'll discuss it with you. But you all have an example of this tool in your packet. I cannot thank you again for your attendance and for your attention and your good questions. And again, a big round of applause to our panelists.